happens to, I mean, you look at HCE. HCE can be anybody, but it's also a certain aristocratic person, a certain person of authority at different levels. And if you have that authority on a secret level, what happens to your children? And so the children were a metaphor for our technologies, which are created by us, extensions of us, like babies.
Right, right.
And so this children growing up, the stage of apprehension, is what he was providing. He was providing a manual for future generations to go through these media barcodes. And so we were the, you know, the best example.
But why did he put
what happened?
Why did he put such a heavy access point in front of all of that information? Why these run-on, just loopy sentences? Why not just say it?
Well, Bob, can I just interject, because it applies directly to Eben. Because, you know, we're talking about you and R. You are. Who are we? You are. Understanding and relationships. So the word alchemist, alchemy, radio alchemy, in the wake is Alshemist, A-L-S-H-E-mist. So that's Eben herself is in the wake as the Alshemist. And, you know, back to Frank saying, he asked the question, but who was Falconelli in the Morning of the Magicians, which previewed radio alchemy by years? So the question is, did Joyce identify with the alchemist language with all these double meanings and wordplay, or as Eben was just saying, run-ons?
Well, that's because it's rock and roll in print. This looping of language is what one experiences when you listen to KPFK 24/7 or any radio station. The verbal vocal utterances are the content of radio. The real experience of radio is a simultaneous ESP, the discarnate effect. And so you're going to have loopy languages, loopy content, rock and roll, rock, psychedelic, new age music, classical music, jazz, all interweaved. That's the content of Finney's Wake. It's not just letters. That's why he scatters the letters, breaks them up, just so you don't stay affixed on the letters. It's not a book to read. It's a book to see as a painting, as a musical presentation, a TV show, of what we experience daily. And this was what was happening in the 20s and 30s. So definitely it's about Eben. It's about the radio experience.
Hmm. Right, because McLuhan realized that the Zen process was extended by TV. Maybe you could talk about why did Joyce put Christian Murty in the wake on page 472, line 15. Now, our Krishnamurti.
Okay, one second. This is where we're picking up right after this break. Let me let people just take a little breather real quick. On the lines, Jerry Fialco. On the lines, Bob Dobbs. All inside your luscious heads. And wow, I mean, talk about, forget the ice pick. These are just nice chilled hands that are massaging your skull cavity and just letting you know that life is so much more interesting than some of the blood and mayhem that you are seeing out there. And so, get into it. We'll probably open up the phone lines at the top of the hour. For all of you McLuhanese out there, this is KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, San Diego, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We're going to be back into this mix. Just so marvelous. Jerry Fialco, Bob Dobbs here on Radio Alchemy, and we'll be back in a second. Radio Alchemy. Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
And remember, darlings, you need to go to www.kpfk.org. There you will hear the smorgasbord, all of those loops and laws, which is KPFK. We have over 100 programmers here. We're not like any of these other AM stations where you get one big voice across, you know, like a big fat voice, like Glush Limbaugh, whatever his name is, Lush Grimball, whatever his name is, you know, going across. No, lots of individuals bringing you their heart chakra and helping to ease your way into, you know, some kind of evolutionary path. And so that's what it's all about here on KPFK at www.kpfk.org. So let's just get back into this mix. Bob Dobbs, Jerry Fialco on Radio Alchemy tonight. So fantastic to have them and to be able to listen in on, it seems like a private conversation, but then also pop in too. And you're going to have a chance to do that at the top of the hour. Meanwhile, back in the underground lab, Jerry and Bob are picking up where their conversation was taking place.
Well, Bob, you remember where we left off. Why did Joyce put Krishnamurti in there? Krishnamurti, why no one understands me?
Joyce went to Gypsy Psychics all the time. He was in great pain doing Finnegan's Wake. I mean, he was pushing the envelope. He was creating the most avant-garde artifact that humanity will ever create. That's quite a statement, but that's what it is. He preserves literacy for people if they value that. So he went to psychics. He was involved with the psychics. I can quote you some of the people that refer to this in a book by Grace Eckley. Also, the Dante idea is not too far off. There is scholarship on Joyce's study of Dante. So I just have the extra advantage of talking to him. Now, Krishnamurti gave a great speech in 1929 on the radio in Denmark, Copenhagen. I can't remember, Omen, O-M-M-E-N, someplace like that. And Joyce, listen to that. This is a guy, this is the Tim Leary, who else? Aleister Crowley, Gurdjieff, even James Joyce of the 20s. This guy had a lot of publicity. Go back and look at the clippings. He was born in 1895, so he was 33 years old, and he was the head of a world messiah movement, and he stepped down during this speech, this famous speech in 1929. And that was the model for Sean, the spiritual physician, the guru, the one spreading a message. And Joyce knew that verbal messages of enlightenment, including Zen, were obsolete under the radio effect. And so, of course, Krishnamurti is going to be pilloried and knife-picked by Joyce because Krishnamurti didn't understand why no one understood him. And Joyce understood why no one understood him because Krishnamurti refrained and limited himself. As all the people are presented on special programming, even on KPFK, there are verbal people, oral culture, and that does not offer insight, and only insight into tactile environments presented by Finnegan's Wake.
And, Bob, what about Krishnamurti discussing the catch of Catch-22 of memory? Because, you know, we want to remember and live in this past history. Like, actually, Wyndham Lewis said it best, you taught me so well, artists are the only ones living in the present, thus writing a detailed history of the future. So why did Krishnamurti talk about overcoming memory?
Yeah, see, there's a blindness. It was an important spiritual wisdom to overcome memory, not be controlled by your mind in the memory theater, in an oral culture, a pre-literate culture, or even in a book culture. But when you get into electric culture and then the digital culture, and we're very familiar, people want to forget everything because the data banks know more about you than what you can remember. So to be in any environment and a terrorist or a nihilist or an anarchist or a perceptual person in relation to that, you go around not remembering anything on purpose. Okay, so Krishnamurti's value system of getting rid of your memory becomes a popular burger thing sold by New Age esoteric schools and workshops. All right, so it's an obsolete thing. So then Joyce knew that the android meme, he didn't call it that, but the electric theater was coming and would present a memory theater right in front of you. And so he erases every element in Finnegan's Wake, if you were looking for a substructure of meaning, to mime and satirize the no-memory situation we're coming to. At the same time, realizing that that's not a problem because all the media will enhance your memory through instant replay. These complexities are not addressed by Krishnamurti or Gurdjieff or anybody you feature on your show there, Evan. They do not deal with this. And, of course, this is important new knowledge, and new knowledge is never that easy to understand.
But Bob, we got to remember that Ned forced Roy to play McLuhan once, and McLuhan realized that the Zen process was extended by the TV, and Marshall also said the reason baby boomers took LSD was because they had to replay their television upbringing. When they went to college in their lonely teenage dorm room, they had to replay this television experience, so they took LSD. So why did Joyce put LSD, the letters LSD, in the wake, disguised as money, cash flow, back to the ocean is the ultimate solution?
Because he was aware of Albert Hoffman's work through my father, Albert Hoffman. I was in the lab on April 19th, 1943. I didn't know what was going to happen to Hoffman that day, but my father visited him, was checking out what he was doing. My father knew a lot about I.G. Farben and what was going on in Basel, Switzerland. It was historical. It was built up through the chemical industries there. And so Joyce heard about the mind drugs being worked on. I don't know how he came up with LSD, because that wasn't coined until later. But Joyce allowed the language to speak for and be psychic itself. That's another interesting thing. He wasn't tossing a pendulum or looking at a crystal ball to see what he'd say. He knew, and the surrealists developed this, the automatic writing, he knew that they could let the language come through and be a medium, and it will talk about stuff that you personally don't know.
That's the symbolist. That's the symbolist. You taught me well about that, too. Now, we were going to be taking calls soon, and Eben put the call out to these McLuhan people. Well, we call them McLuhan Knights, but actually they're McLuhan Days. So it's nights and days, like you say. Words evoke more than their meaning. Now, you know, there's an Irish word called Blarney. It's the ability to tell a man to go to hell in such a way that he looks forward to making the trip. Now, a lot of people would say it's Blarney, that we would insist that Joyce invented the internet or experimental film or Twitter or cell phones. He invented this and disguised it as a book. Could you elucidate on this idea that Joyce invented social networking and disguised it as a book?
He saw that language contained the experience of the race and then eventually the experience of everybody as the electric telegraph brought the world together in the Gobo Village 150 years ago. He saw that language would add to its collective memory with new media. And so, let's see. Therefore, he could figure out almost mathematically, and he was taking on Einstein trying to solve a space-time question. Well, Joyce realized that Einstein was a knee-jerk response to the telegraph and the radio environment. So he said, okay, I can see the laws of media and what's going to happen here. That means language will be extended, and it will become a muzak of digital scatterbrain Finneganese. He actually mimed how language would come, and it's not a negative thing. But the only way to get a static position in relation to that, a stable position, the poise that Zen or Alan Watts would offer, and McLuhan thought Alan Watts, very simple man, very simple, missed the point of Zen and why it was happening, why he was popular, said McLuhan. And so Joyce set up a way to have poise, and that is to sit in a group and look at a book, and everybody, no matter what your background, can explore in a group session and get more insights than you ever could get by yourself reading one book by yourself. He solved the political problem of how to form cells to create a revolution of consciousness, because the stability, the value of the extended eye, which is the book, and that's it's a disservice if you don't know how the printing press wipes this out, but the extension of the eye is valuable as an artifact in itself. He froze the eye, like Duchamp did with his last artifact that was invisible. You know, look through the peephole, and there you see the woman, what's that called, Etant Donnet? Anyways, Duchamp, who is mentioned in Finnegan's Wake, the first conversation, Jute and Mutt, page 16, refers to R. Mutt signing the fountain in the Armory Show, 1917. Anyways, the solidifying the eye, look to page 52, the greatest quote ever, probably. He says, television kills, telephony and brothers boil, and the eyes demand their turn. Let them be seen. He saw the digital effect coming. And he saw future media would alter language, but it could be frozen in the book to let the eyes be seen. The eyes demand their turn. It's right there.
You're in fine form tonight. How about the instant replay offering meaning minus the experience? That's reversing T.S. Eliot. We had the experience but missed the meaning. So this onslaught of words and terms to all these radio listeners might be applying now. What do you think about that? Why do we have to have instant replay? Why do we have to have language in the first place? Why can't we just live life? Why do we have to recreate everything?
Well, we do come here to create. As Ion says, you know, when you're in the non-physical, you don't create. You can't create. But when you're physical, you're here to create. So we are going to create environments, and language is one of the earliest creations. So the point you were asking about, instant replay. So language is the first replay. It stores experience and expedites experience. And so every medium, from writing to the print book up to now to the actual instant replay, is a replay, is metaphorical. It's a translation of your environment into another form so you can see it. So language is translating people's guttural, tactile, gestural experience into another environment. Okay, so it's an instant replay. Every medium is an instant replay.
Mm-hmm. It's like instant replay, which is Twitter, which is spoken word, is the meaning in that it is less concerned with the input of experience than with the process of perception.
But
right.
But I think Twitter is not replay. Twitter is
That's
all
right.
about instantaneous. I am doing this right now. That's
making
not.
It up.
Well, making they're not making it, They're not making it up. They are actually talking about it. I mean, they say that it's stupid, you know, because somebody's like, I'm sitting here in the radio station listening to these guys. I don't know what they're saying. You see, you know, or I'm sitting there. I'm just completely mesmerized. These guys are like kicking butt.
They're
and so that's
stabilized. They're trying to get stabilized. Let me address this meaning. This might clarify this. I forgot to do this. So we're looking for meaning. Meaning only comes in when you have a written society, which focuses on a symbol, a stable image that everybody rotates their accounting practices around, personal and economic. So meaning, if you have the experience before the meaning, that's pre-literate life. It's also post-literate life. We market meaning because it's obsolete, but we don't want meaning. We want participation. We participate the sun, which is twittering and the extension of the sun, the electric media, heliotropical no time, page 349 of Finnegan's Wake.
Really good, Bob, because written society is what caused us to have meaning. And before written society, we were oral culture. And that's what Joyce is saying. He's saying, let's make this written society be oral and read the wake out loud.
That's a subplot. That's not the main point. He was satirizing all media dimensions, including the written life and the oral life and the tactile life and the Twitter life. All these can only be done through the meaningful medium, the book. The book is the only medium that generates meaning because it's literate. It stops. Meaning is freezing the flow of experience. And we have four bodies now, so how the hell can you organize the flow of that? That's why people try to get a sense of public shared space by making a fad out of the Harry Potter books. That's an ecological response to the fragmentation scattering of everybody making up their own situation on Twitter. They may be reporting what they're doing, but who is seeing it? Who is responding to it?
Well,
what is the meaning that gets if everybody is doing it to each other?
Bob, this is good because if you could stick on this word meaning for a second, we're all trying to walk around, find meaning and acknowledgement. And the third step of the tetrad that McLuhan did on instant replay, he said it retrieves meaning, and he put it in quotes, and then he put the name I.A. Richards after that. Maybe you could explain that.
Well, the famous book by Richards is The Meaning of Meaning. That came out in 1923, and it had an addendum by Malinowski, the anthropologist, forefather of Margaret Mead and the gang, who had come from the Trobriand Islanders, I think it was, in the Pacific Ocean, and he was the first to notice a preliterate culture that didn't focus on meaning. It focused on participation, and he came up with a phrase for it, phatic, phatic, communication, phatic communion. And he saw that the society was cohered not by what people said or what the meanings were, but by the artifacts themselves, the environments, the vicinals, the invisible vicinals. So that was added to this book called The Meaning of Meaning. And that book really provided epiphanies for Duchamp and Joyce in 23, 24, 25 when they read it. And Duchamp has talked about the book. And The Meaning of Meaning is played up in Finnegan's Wake. Now, the instant replay provides the meaning before the experience. Normally, you have an experience, and then you find out the meaning if you're a literate society. How does it relate to a solid agricultural economic system or a solid industrial system? What is my relationship to what's happening by this change, this new experience? Well, when you start having the meaning before the experience, that sort of screws up the literate man's sense of sequential memory absorption. And McLuhan said the instant replay, which we've had on TV since about 1970, best ever designed around sports, we've had that thing confusing our Western metaphysics of meaning and driving people into the arms of Alan Watts and Krishnamurti and L. Ron Hubbard looking for literate meaning, which is the whole New Age one-spirit publishing industry. New Age people are trying to find value in the book, and they won't confront the book that does solve their problems, Finnegan's Wake.
Beautiful.
I'm sorry, I'm going on so much, but
you know, McLuhan and Carpenter were just quoted in the Buffalo News, of all places, a newspaper, and they said that McLuhan and Edmund Carpenter said every new technological advance, quotes, declassifies, unquote, information. It takes something previously secret and opens it to others for scrutiny.
Yeah, like these movies that Eben Ion is talking about,
right.
V and whatever the other one was, these are presenting the old secrets, now visible and physical, because they're no longer vicinal. Mm-hmm. They're no longer really activating us. The biggest secret in the world today is Finnegan's Wake itself.
And the great thing, Bob, is that it will never be current, right?
That's right. It'll be current until you fall off, but it will always be current.
Yeah, there you go.
Let me ask then, how was it then that the prior to Scion, how did they handle this, and did it mean their demise and their obsolescence after they came in contact with this information?
Yeah, the financial control of the world ended in World War One. There was an attempt to retrieve it in the 20s, but that was collapsed by radio. And so the people around my father and his employers, my father was just a butler to a very wealthy family, a wealthy family of 400 years, which was associated with the other well-known wealthy families, plus the secret Christian ones that nobody knows. I'll give you a hint. I won't say that name.
Okay, well, what is that name?
You want that name? You want that meeting?
You want that symbol? You put the bait out there, man.
I forgot. Sorry. I don't know what happened to me. See, I got blocked. I got jammed. I mean, I'm being monitored here, right? There's heavy zap-hop activity going on right here where I am to make sure where I keep on where they want it to go, I hope to. Anyways, the Illuminati collapses in the 30s. Radio icons take over. The first pop star, as David Bowie said, was Adolf Hitler, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then you bring in the non-money society, because the welfare societies of the 30s made money, paper money, public property, no longer privately owned money. So what does that leave the elites? They got art to create a hierarchy of value, so all the wealthy families create the Guggenheim Museum, the Museum of Modern Art, the L.A. Kahn Museum, and all that stuff, Frick Museum. That didn't work too much once the 50s and 60s started unfolding new pop culture environments that were wealthier than anything that Picasso made, movies and TV, which were relatively free environments, so money wasn't the issue anymore, so credit became the issue. Then the digital environment wiped out the credit. Now, I understood this when I was part of the Secret Council in the 80s, and when I took over in 1988, February, right after the great Zappa tour, February 88, you remember that, Jerry? I was there for three concerts in New York City, awesome, Broadway, the Hard Way Tour, the greatest band ever happened in history, all this technology justified by Frank Zappa, who was acting out Finney's Wake musically. Anyways,
we've got to interject the great line when Frank said to you, "No more questions from you, buddy."
Yeah, see, that was in 1978. He put up with me for 20 years, and I taught him a lot. I mean, the last page of his autobiography, cites the higher form of killing. You were part of that, Jerry, us running around giving him the page because he had lost the source. Remember that?
Right. Another great person Roy Tuckman has got to us all for years, Mae Brussel.
Mm-hmm.
Frank and Mae Brussel go together, but let me finish here. So I disbanded the Secret Council 10 in 1990 because it had no more function. There was no more reason. The Android meme was simulating the Illuminati, and that's that. And then the Android meme ran out of course in 2008, August 26, 2008, if you want to know the death of the Android meme or the after image of the Android meme. And we've been floating in the mystery landscape since then, and my team is bringing in what everybody is hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the marketing of the Illuminati and somebody controlling the scene is acceptable. Even you, Evan, told me the other day that you go to parties and little teenagers, "Oh, yeah, I know about the Illuminati. Yeah, the Illuminati." Talk about hallucinations. They're back in the LaRouche quadrant on my chart, right?
Right.
I didn't even know about the obsolescence of money in 1936.
Right.
And, Bob, hopefully we're going to have a call. We're taking calls soon. We're going to have a call from Professor Illuminatus.
It's about time. That guy's been running for me for years.
I know.
He a couple years ago. He comes in and he'll say, "Bob, you're not in fine form tonight. You're not in fine form. We've heard all this before."
We've got to have fake Robert Anton Wilsons as well as the real ones calling into KPFK to talk to Bob.
Yeah, let's bring on the church subgenius. Where is Reverend Stang? Those cowards, always afraid of me. Run, run, run. Claim I'm Bob Dean.
Well, that's why Bob.
Penis is on my face. Yeah, it's all silly. Hey, you cowards, come on out, you. Well, you know what.
Just want to say to the. Yeah, okay, one second, Jerry. 1 second. I'm just going to remind folks that they're tuned to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, San Diego, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. On the lines, Bob Dobbs, Jerry Fialko. I'm trying to, like, somebody has tapped me on my psychic shoulder to say, could you tell us who is on right now? This is fascinating. Let's let people know what is going on. Jerry Fialko runs the Marshall McLuhan reading group that's now over in Marina Del Rey, at the Marina Del Rey Library. And what days do you meet, Jerry?
It's the first Tuesday of every month.
Okay, the first Tuesday of every month. And
you just go to laughtears.com for info on all my film screenings and reading clubs and links to Bob's knowledge. And that's a word that Joyce invented in Finnegan's Wake, where he, like Michael Silverblatt, a bookworm, would say, Joyce put a typo in every word on purpose. So you got the whole human condition in one word. You don't have to read Finnegan's Wake. You can read one word and get the whole Finnegan's Wake. Laugh, tears. We laugh and we cry, and that's the human condition. And you just go to laughtears.com.
Are you sure he just didn't look at that one, what is it? In drama. In drama, they have that two,
well,
separated face,
yeah,
you know,
face,
that two face of drama, you know,
fact,
something like that.
Line, Bob,
but let me, Jerry, 1 second. Let me get to Bob.
Okay.
And also on the lines, Bob Dobbs. His website is www.fivebodied.com, fivebodied.com. And I know you have a number of other websites that have just come up, Bob, such as
Dobstown.com.
Right, Dobstown.com.
And howionic.com is what I'm doing right now.
Right.
Bringing in my team. This is part of the cold fusion revolution we're bringing in. We've got the Guff helping us in the last stages of this post-Android meme mystery landscape, and who would believe that? But I've always been unbelievable. Well, that doesn't matter because I'm going for it. And as Evan knows, I'm the only one who got it right about the UFOs if you want to prove something in Nature magazine. So on and on it goes. I got an incredible record. I'm batting 1,000, as some people used to say. that doesn't matter. We're participating in making sense today.
Yes, yes, yeah, making sense. And it says stop making sense, right? But no, we can...
Right,
we can
tactile.
Right, right, that's it.
And the way Ion goes on, you know, we believe something and say we're faithful to this idea today, and tomorrow we turn around and do the opposite. We're waspish. That means stinging, you know. We sting. We turn on each other all the time. Non-physical finds it hilarious, but we do that. We change every... And now the media, the Android meme, is catching up and changing faster than we can change.
So, you know what, but you were saying, when I asked you what happened to these higher levels of organizations from the Illuminati, et cetera, and you come into the Secret Council of Ten, what's interesting is whenever I ask you about the mayhem that's going on in the world, you talk to them, you talk about them as these little fiefdoms, as these little units of bureaucracies that are replaying their own histories and, like, you know, the wars, the military-industrial complex. Could you take one of these retrievals of these bureaucracies, say the military-industrial complex, what we saw the Bush years do, and say what that fiefdom and that management structure means within McLuhan and Finnegan's Wake?
Well, the media, look at that term, comes in the 60s. People are talking about this force that's outside of themselves, outside of the community, that's running havoc over everybody. That was the popular statement about the Android meme, that technology and software had come alive and took on a life of its own. That's what people mean by the media. Blame the media. The media did this. Well, the media, the Android meme, always exaggerates the wars, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and all these things, these old hardware wars where people fight over the scraps of obsolete hardware, and the medium, the electronic media in the global theater, which is the major military operation focused around advertising, that is the military. That's World War IV. It's been going on for 50 years. It likes to point out how bad Bush was for bombing Iraq and this and stuff. And they point to this old hardware stuff, and it has no meaning. The military Pentagon is lost. Lost, running out, as McLuhan would say, fighting these hardware wars in the backyards of the world. Now, the Pentagon is involved in the real military operation, Madison Avenue, or whatever you want to call it today, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You know, Murdoch and them got to buy these environments as soon as they show up.
Yes.
And then put in some fake control. But the real amazing point is that none of this stuff has any control over anybody. And McLuhan, picking up on Finnegan's Wake, said in 1967 that Madison Avenue couldn't condition a mouse. We are free from all cultural conditioning. And the secret societies try to condition people on through speech or through strobe lighting or through some stupid little box symbol, you know, the coffin symbol of the Skull and Bones and the Freemasons. These are ancient, puny artifacts compared to television. But we don't have television conditioning us anymore. Everybody makes their own TV now in their own sight. You cannot come up with an image of tyranny from any cultural artifact that jives with the tyranny we're having now, and you also can't come up with an image, like from Brave New World or Orwell, of the freedom we experience now that we have.
Is this why? Yeah. Is this why? In this amazing collapsed environment, where right in front of our eyes, for people that are staying in the, you know, radio TV realm, we see that our country pensions, etc., all this money just completely ripped off right in front of our eyes. They bail out Wall Street, you know, in this, you know, material structure, and nobody reacts. Is that a kind of an example as to how the programming isn't working? Because they really, I think, there was somebody wagering that people were going to be out in the streets and blowing stuff up, et cetera, and they'd get to pull out the military hardware and start zapping Americans. Does that have anything to do with what you were saying about the freedom that we actually have right now?
Yeah, that's a bingo. On Cashflow with James Martinez, we advocate people immediately demand martial law and let's put ourselves in the jail. We're already in jail in our homes. We have no jobs. We can't pay our mortgages. So let's get paid. Let's get fed. Put us in jail. And we also got a new idea. I won't go into it now, but we're advocating that people go to their bank, take a blank check out of their checkbook, and write, pay to the order of the U.S. government $10 trillion. If we get 1,000 people to do that, it'll crash the system. But the system doesn't need to be crashed. It's already crashed, yet it's still going. The silent majority is the answer. The idea of not responding, not making noise, and the apathy that people, some people complain about, is saving us. Nobody's reacting to this crisis.
Yes.
Hey, Bob,
they are in pain. They are in psychological pain because they're wrestling in the mystery landscape in this post-meaning era, trying to figure out where to have your ID. What are you going to align it with?
Right,
so we
right.
We really have a group probing on a colossal level, which is nothing other than finning its wake, which is showing every language, every meeting, groping and struggling with anthropomorphic projections in it, known as characters like H-E-A-L-P and the kids. This groping for identity is the eternal agony of our time.
Bob, it's like Sun Ra said, everybody's in jail, but Sun Ra's jail's the best. But I would revamp it to say, everybody's in jail, but Bob's jail's the best.
All right. On the lines. Okay, on the lines, we have Bob Dobbs and Jerry Fialka just having a marvelous time listening to these two genies just unravel. God and it's so many multi so deep but yet
yes,
it's so wonderful.
We've been spiraling, but just here's the thought to meditate on. Finnegan's Wake is rock and roll or rock or electrified music in print. Now think of that. This was before you had electrified music.
Okay.
When you did this.
Okay, locate, darlings. The number here is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to start to line up the calls for Jerry and Bob. If you guys have any questions, any restatements, et cetera, come on down. Be adventurous. Be just be a part of what you don't know.
Talk in your sleep.
Yeah, whatever it is, because it's all going to fit. you just never know. Okay, darling, so stay tuned. Number here is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, if you want to talk to Jerry and Bob. Okay, stay tuned. Stay tuned for the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. Welcome back to the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. All right, loves, and we are back on the lines, Jerry Fialco and Bob Dobbs, and we have been in just a whirlwind tour of their mind inside ours, and wow, stirring, so amazing. Really amazing stuff. So we have a couple callers on the line. Let's just jump right into that, shall we? Hi, caller one, you are on with Jerry and Bob. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Oh, hello, Evan. This is Blanche.
Hi, Blanche.
How you doing? You're the goddess of the night.
Oh, no, you're the goddess of the night, and thank you for coming on down to the smorgasbord.
Yes, there's not enough women embracement. Like I said, it was always a he doing this, a he doing that. But, you know, but is it any way that anybody can explain what y'all talked about tonight without the bigotry tone of voice?
Good.
What tone of voice?
You know, it's not like you guys are arguing. It's like one want to be right above everything, and nobody knows to know everything. You know, I think that it's better for my mind for you just to keep things simple on KPFK, and I'm knocking Evan up, you know, knocking some people that's on the program on KPFK because people attribute to the station, and everybody's not going to follow every theory or even belief. So we need to try to be calmer when we speak, especially people that have experience with domestic violence, such as myself. But thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Blanche. Thank you so much.
We really need to try to get some women on your show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm a woman. I'm a black woman.
Thank you.
I already said I'm a black woman.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Blanche. Thank you, darling. Thank you.
All right. Evan, bye-bye. Did you hear me? I'm a black woman. Said that.
Yes, yes. And, but, you know, she makes a really good point. And I think she stands in for a lot of individuals, very adventurous souls that stay up late that want to get it. And so she is asking, of course, for you guys to unwind it just a little bit more. Like if you would take your rock and roll metaphor. And also what's so interesting, if you're going to use rock and roll as a metaphor, is I've been, it seems that the current and the beat of music has to do with our heartbeat, that basic, the basic 1, 2, 3, 4 is very much linked, to the heartbeat of the body and that kind of rhythm. And then you get Frank Zappa who comes in and takes that basic beat and obliterates it. And there's that ice pick to the skull. And so if you can maybe, go outside the comfort zone, outside that 4-quarter beat, bring in that rock and roll metaphor as to how all of these environments that is hoisted up, you know, by Joyce as you're going into it affect us today.
Right.
I don't know if that helps.
I can tell you what's going on is that Bob is a black woman. The word mafia starts with the letters ma. The women run the world, but they let men think they run the world. So she wants Bob to be Frank Sinatra in crooner rather than being Frank Zappa. What Bob's doing is reinventing Frank Sinatra and Frank Zappa and creating an anti-environment so that we're not some nabulism.
Well, you know what? What Blanche called in and asked Jerry was for someone not to mash it up.
Right.
In your own speech, I'm asking on her behalf and on a lot of people out there for you guys to really boil it down. Just
right.
Okay, Jared.
Right, let me boil it down.
Let Bob boil it down.
Okay, we are saying that I. A. Richards put out this book called The Meaning of Meaning. That would be in 1923, looking at what literary expressive poetic meaning is in a world which to them was speeding up and getting chaotic as the cars and airplanes and telephones and radio movies came into their experience. And that was quite devastating, puny compared to our life. But the thing is, what is the role of meaning? Blanche is looking for meaning. And we're pointing out that the very medium of radio does not give you meaning in the literate point of a stable situation or a stable conclusion.
But why
That's
not?
What
with,
we're miming.
But why? Why does it not bring meaning when the radio is just a conduit for linear thought?
Yeah, because we think the radio is speech. And speech is just the content, the linear thought, whereas the actual simultaneous of experience of everybody hearing the speech at the same time, which has never happened in previous societies unless you believe in Atlantis and the head ESP, we have a technological ESP here. That is the real meaning of radio. It unites the world into a simulated imitation of the body of Christ as prophesied by Dante. So the verbal meaning, you keep listening to the issues and content and songs of the radio environment and thinking that's telling you something, whereas actually what is told is the media experience, the electric environment you're swimming in. That is the endpoint, be-all and simultaneous ecstasy of instant electric communication. So when Blanche says that she wants to hear some comforting programs or some female voices, that is meaningful for her. That's the way she wants her meaning retrieved. And people do use older media like radio to build up meaning. Rush Limbaugh is meaningful for all kinds of people who don't want to understand the message of Marshall McLuhan, Finnegan's Wake, or me.
Right.
It's a nostalgic replay of conceptual content that speech and music gives that people want to think is still there. And it is there. Stop struggling. You're going to have endless speech. Endless meaning will be sold to you. And you'll have all your choices. But there is another part of life, of extended experience, that overcomes the boredom of that.
And so
that's what the medium is providing.
Very good, very good. Okay, we're going to let Blanche marinate on that, and I, you know, hear your sailing call.
Okay, let's make it real simple.
Okay.
Real simple. We apologize for being on this network. Sorry, I thought we were on an interesting, challenging alternative voice, and we'll leave. We'll go somewhere else that wants to be stirred up.
And Bob,
we'll let ourselves be replaced by women.
There are important female voices on KPFK for years, and Amy Goodman and all that. But listen, Frank Zappa played a record skip for 15 minutes on KPCC once. He made a radio show that's not a radio show, and a disc jockey from KPFK called up and said, "Dude, your record's skipping." And he says, "We know the record's skipping. We're playing a record skip for 15 minutes."
Okay, well, that's just like Chinese water torture for your ears and head. I mean, so that's the whole point that I was making about music, and music that sits down to the body's resonance of the heartbeat and stays at that heartbeat. And then you have somebody like Frank Zappa that comes in with an ice pick and takes away that comfort zone. And so, Blanche, you're outside the comfort zone, but it's great to know that the world is so vast and huge, and it encompasses the dialogue that you hear tonight. So if you're interested, go to their website. You can go to laughtears.com and also 5body.com and start dipping into this wonderment.
And remember,
you know,
embrace contradiction. That's what Gurdjieff said, that laughter is the reconciliation of yes and no. It's embracing the contradiction. We were talking about anthropology earlier. Claude Levi-Strauss just died, one of the great philosophers turned anthropologist. He knew that opposites serve as organizing elements, black and white, cooked and raw, rational and emotional. And dig it, he said he studied some cannibal groups that boiled their friends and roasted their enemies.
Yeah, so if we here on KPFK have some kind of enemy known as Wall Street or capitalism or something, maybe not everybody in KPFK audience feel that way, but there is that meme. Become practiced in what the enemy is skillful at. And the enemy is skillful at doing what Jerry just described. Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson is a master of contradiction. They know there was no crash, yet there was a crash, and they live in the interval. We need to learn to live like that, or at least realize how the environment makes us want to live in that contradiction. What Jerry's quoting is not a value system. It's a practical way of responding to the digital contradiction we exist in when we have four bodies.
Okay. Let's go to caller. Caller 2, you're on of Jerry and Bob. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Great, welcome. What's your name?
This is Terrence McKay. antenna calling from an alien world filled with alien forms of intelligence. I've been with the X's, Bob.
Ah, the X's, yes. That was the Evergreens. Oh, I wanted to mention the Menosteric Goats, Evan.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is about the psychic remote viewing stuff at Stanford, right?
Right, exactly, and at Fort Detrick.
Yeah, I'm going to give an exclusive. All that is a distraction from what the CIA was really studying, which was Michael Blake Reed and the Evergreens. They don't tell you about that. There's a secret. First time ever said on public airwaves.
Well, of course they would be studying Michael Blake Reed. Oh, right? Right? Wouldn't they?
Yes, and they don't want to let anybody know it, so they say we're studying Stanford. That's a distraction.
Fantastic.
Stanford is not what they were really studying. The best medium was the Evergreens. And they could follow with them regularly.
So, great. So they run a parallel system, and they leak it, so people are looking that way.
Yeah. Another reason why it's healthy, Blanche should understand we're in a post-information society, and you don't have to worry about what you're hearing on the radio. Start making your own broadcast in your own mind. It's just as effective.
Well, they don't get exclusives in your own mind.
Yes, they do. You have to sleep in dreams.
Now, isn't Terrence still on the line? I think he has a question for Bob.
Yeah, he mentioned the X's. He's talking about way back.
Hi, Terrence.
Hi, I'm calling from the great beyond the grave.
Okay, and?
Well, that's the radio. The radio is the great beyond.
Well,
it's incarnate.
What's your question, Terrence?
Well, I just spoke to James Joyce the other night, and he...
Yes, that's possible. What did he say?
He told me that I was correct. That
about what?
When he wrote that man will be dirigible, he meant that we will lose the limitations of physical and three-dimensional space.
Are you getting this, Jerry? We had Robert Anton Wilson, 15 years ago. We got Terrence McKenna's ghost here.
Well, we know that all the limo liberals and champagne socialists in Los Angeles and beyond love to read Terrence McKenna's books so they can vicariously take drugs. They don't have to take them anymore. They can just read about taking them. So maybe Terrence is trying to say, what's the deal with reading Finnegan's Wake out loud with a group of people? Isn't that vicariously trying to experience the hidden effects of what we invent?
What do you say to that, Terry?
It's Finnegan's Wake is probably a fake experience for people who aren't willing to take the heroic dose of psilocybin mushrooms.
did you know that Joyce took drugs regularly? He disguised it with claiming he was
told
drunk.
Told me that.
I don't disagree with that.
That this is what was going to happen when time wave zero hits. In partial, time wave zero has already come upon us.
Did Joyce tell you that I had a factor in killing you? Remember, we got in touch by email in late 98, and you couldn't address what I criticized about you. And then quickly after that, as you ran around California, you went back to Hawaii, where I am now, and you collapsed and died a year later. I was the last person you failed to connect with.
That's why I came to confront one of my killers.
Well, you know what, Terrence? It sounds more like an implosion of ego. I don't think you could blame Bob for it.
Who? Terrence McKenna? He didn't die of implosion of ego. I have talked to Terrence, and if this is him, I've talked to Terrence through the Evergreens. We can play that on the tape for you someday.
Great. That's great. But, okay, we need to move on. We have callers. Is there anything else, Terrence?
Yes. When I talked to James Joyce, I didn't have a chance to ask him a question. He had a pressing engagement, and he left before I had a chance to ask him if there were any references in Finnegan's Wake to private investigators from Las Vegas who investigate UFO sightings.
And yes, there was. He did. The famous line in Finney's Wake, which is my motto, let me be Los Angeles. That's why I get wild when Jerry shows up. I mean, you go listen to that Sponto's rant I did in May 2008. That's one of the best performances I ever did. This is another wild night with Jerry Fialka and the Funny Farm. It's because I'm in Los Angeles, and I'm Los Angeles.
All right, Terry had to go. We have to move on.
I killed him, just like Robert Anton Wilson, who fainted on May 29th, 1993, when he and his double called in. Jerry was there. He taped it.
Well,
by the way, Jerry, we need a copy of that.
Well, you know what? I want to know about that dentist you said that told you to, you know, stop, and you said 3 days later he died. What was up with that dentist?
3 weeks. Well, he thought that I was being a megalomaniac. He did not allow my inspiration to Finney's Wake. He said, no, there's a meaning here, a pattern. It has nothing to do with you, Bob. He didn't understand the user's content principle. He also wouldn't believe that actually I did know Joyce and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He was a dentist. He was an older man. And he died 3 weeks later. And his wife didn't come for a while, his widow. But then she showed up after a while, got over her grieving, and she attended the wake for like 95 till 2000. And around 99, she came up to me and she said, you know, Bob, my husband didn't agree with you, thought you were a nut, but I have listened to you for 5 years and everybody else, and you're right on the money.
But why did he die? Why did he die?
Probably because he objected to me. I mean, you don't want to mess with me.
No, stop. Right. Caller 3, you're on with Jerry and Bob. Caller 3.
Hi, this is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
So my question, is there anything that we should know that we don't know, or is everything right on schedule as far as us as a culture and as a species?
That's no concern of yours. You should be concerned about your own situation, and that's always on time. So you're okay. You are okay. The Android meme is not too okay, and it's having a problem staying on time. And the only breakthrough of that dilemma will be cold fusion, that technology. I've been saying this for 20 years, 1989.
So everybody looking out for number one in this environment is
on the right track. It's on the right track because Android Meme makes you become number one with the MySpace, YouTube, decentralized inflation of your supernatural four bodies. That is the technological environment, and everybody will live as if everything is their own universe.
Yeah, but what happens in the communing around James Joyce's books then, you know, like what Jerry is doing? What happens in that then?
No problem. It provides the Bible. I'm on London radio with Ben Watson today, and we discussed Finney's Wake, and I say as a political act, if I formed a religion, it would demand people to read Finney's Wake like they do the Bible once a week, and then you wouldn't get stuck in one group. You'd shift to another group, because the whole point is the democratic replay of Finney's Wake is a stabilizer for the sense of human community. It is the most marvelous revolutionary solution to our social problems that this caller just asked about. Join Jerry's Finney's Wake group. Then form your own group and force Jerry to go over that.
Very good, Bob. Derek's already done that right here in L.A. at another bookstore. And, you know, that's the important thing, Eben, is that we're doing media yoga. So we're breathing together as a group, as a community.
Okay.
This gentleman's call question was very good, and it spurred this whole idea that Blanche, me, you, Bob, and all these listeners are breathing together in and out as a form of media yoga.
Ron, did you have anything else?
When you're in a group with Finney Gets Wake.
No. Just listening and trying to understand it all.
You know what, Ron? I applaud you. I mean, it is 3:20 in the morning, and you are engaged. And that is, I think, just brilliant and wonderful.
That's like a Finney Gets Wake. This is a Finney Gets Wake reading group. We're miming it. We're putting out sort of verbally incomprehensible stuff. Is pretty fast, but that's the experience of Finney's Wake.
Right.
And you can get used to that by joining a group. We are being Finney's Wake. That's what Blanche doesn't understand. We're minding what we're talking about.
And, Eben, understanding is not having a point of view. You know, McLuhan talked about our behavior is shaped not by experience, but by understanding.
Okay. Hey, Ron, Hey, Ron, I really want to thank you for calling, dear.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. The number here is 1 second, you guys. Oh, my God, 1 second. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Let's finish that thought real quick, and let's get to these callers, guys. They've been holding them up.
No, Jerry, I've never said this to you before. You say don't have a point of view. Have a point of view when you're around book people.
Good.
But don't be limited to being a book person. You can have multi-environments, and you do have multi-environments. So that only applies if you're going to be in any environment to book people, but also you can put on having a point of view while you're with them.
All right, darlings, 1 second. Caller 4, join us here on the air. Hi, caller 4. Hi.
Wow, this is great. I feel a part of the collective consciousness at this moment.
You are, man.
I'm so happy to be here with you guys. Hello, Bob.
Hey, do we know?
We're going to. I just want to touch on something that you guys were speaking about. We're all here breathing together. I would just like to say, could you please touch on what's going on up in our skies with all these chemtrails?
That comes up every time I'm on Evan's show. This is 2000. There's
it's
no
happening.
Problem with chemtrails.
It's happening.
There's no problem.
It's happening constantly, and
yeah, and it's just the military working with experimental stuff. It has no effect on you. Don't worry about it. And I know no one will believe this, but that's my opinion.
Wow.
No, that's not the way that they're spreading this flu bug.
How would you know about any of this stuff? Because you read about it in the blogosphere or in the main news. I mean, they're not spreading the swine flu. The swine flu is there for people who want to transition. Every death is a suicide, as Ion teaches. The only people that will catch it are the ones that believe in it.
But
you
these kids...
It's going to affect you.
Yeah, but they're saying that most of the people that have died have been kids. Okay.
Well, the kids are conscious. They're closer to the source energy than we are. They want to check out sooner.
Okay.
They're really into suicide.
What is the secret? Well, finish your point for the caller. What secret stuff is the Pentagon experimenting with?
Nothing. They've given up. They're playing around with time travel and this and that, but that's nothing compared to what the population is doing. They're trying to figure out how to keep their budget going so
yeah.
that they're looking busy. They are obsolete.
Why do
they? There are people blowing things up, but that's just renegade stuff. That's always going on. There's always people got leftover garbage thrown at other people. It's not orchestrated.
Bob, maybe the chemtrails are like the Wicked Witch in Wizard of Oz. She's using, the broom to write messages in the sky, which is advertising. And just remember, all advertising advertises advertising.
Well, you
That's
know what?
Right.
They did use chemtrails in an AT&T ad. I remember seeing that. That was very interesting. They had a plane fly through and make the tin from this calling card that they have with one of the flights leaving a chemtrail, which is interesting. Hey, caller, did you have another question? Was that satisfactory
yeah,
to you?
Yeah, it's very positive. I can totally relate to that and understand that it's gonna, it's all gonna be fine. I that's great. Great news, Bob. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, for you. This is
thank you, caller.
It's relevant to Finnegan's Wake. James Joyce made fun of death and transition. He made fun of these people standing around looking at this body and wondering who died and why did he wake up and was he really dead? The original Wake motif. The Irish Wake is what Joyce is satirizing, and he's satirizing the concern about death. He was actually quite hip.
Hmm. On the lines, Bob Dobbs, Jerry Fialko, and you, if you want to call, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Wherever you want to come from with your question, bring it and see if Joyce handled it, because you have two maestros and mavericks that are going to sit there and put it into this incredible soup of extended environments out there. And so that's what it's all about. That's right. And so thank you, darlings. Pattern recognition. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. A quick break, and we're coming back to you guys. Bring it. Just bring it on, whatever you want to ask. Hey, this is no holds barred, all right? Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
All right, darlings. Well, the phone lines just kind of went ballistic. So remember to go to www.kpfk.org, and there you're just going to find a bunch of really great people to swim with, too. Tonight, you're tuned to Radio Alchemy. My name is Eben, and I am sitting here just enjoying, along with you, Jerry Fialka and Bob Dobbs. They have, as you can tell, they have a long history, and it's really great to be little flies or just Homo sapien consciousness this on the wall, listening to them mack it up, and then just be able to intersperse it. And so
we
that's
are the
what's
greatest
so good
sub-geniuses
fun.
America's ever produced. We, Jerry and I, are the greatest sub-geniuses.
Now you, yeah, it's great that you guys are bringing up some of the flack you guys have been taking.
Yeah, we have so much flack, we refuse to join the church.
Okay, we got to get to the calls. Caller 1, you're on with Bob and Jerry. Welcome, and thank you for holding. Caller 1, darling, are you there? Say something. Just say something. Okay, they must have walked away.
They're doing silence. Word silence is scattered through Finnegan's Wake, so that's appropriate.
Okay, all right. Well, that's then the point is taken.
Yes.
You know, when you were talking about this, was it the semicolon, Jerry, you were talking about the colon or the semicolon?
The apostrophe.
The apostrophe. Oh,
the word
okay.
Finnegan's is a man's name. Finnegan's Wake is the name of the Irish folk song.
Yes.
Joyce took the apostrophe out because of Zappa saying the crux of the biscuit is the apostrophe. So he meant Finnegan's, all us Finnegan's, me, you, Roy, Bob, all us Finnegan's, wake up.
Hold it. What do you mean James Joyce took it out because of what Frank Zappa said?
Of course.
Ah, because there's no time. The effects precede the causes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, you got a whole description of Marsha McLuhan on page 254 in Finnegan's Wake, and Joyce never knew Marsha McLuhan, and it's all there. So language transcends time, space, continuum. That's what's a challenge to Einstein.
Okay.
And that includes time jumping, those movies we were talking about, Lost and Quantum Leap and 7 Days and Torchwood and Doctor Who.
Flash forward, all of that.
Yes, so with the Zappa is, and I have a dialogue between Frank Zappa, Wyndham Lewis, and James Joyce, and you can go on my site now. Glow is back. Remember Glow?
Glow's back. Really?
Glow is back. And she's posting. She's a web designer. She posts images as a response now to questions. We're doing the Glow thing. I forgot to tell you that. Yes, and she has a beautiful image of Joyce, McLuhan, and Zappa looking at us.
Now, that's interesting because, all right, that's very interesting. That's okay. All right. So she went, I'm glad she's using her new skills to enhance what is unseen. That's really great. Okay, let's go to the calls, though. Come on. Caller 6, you are on with Jerry and Bob. Welcome.
Oh, my God. Is this the person that wrote that book of the subgenius?
Yes, I'm the person who wrote the book.
Well, I'm the one that wrote you, and you said it was nice to receive a letter in kind, you know, someone that thought the same way. This is 30 years ago or something.
Wow.
I just
the book came
out
in 1983.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm a minister of your sub-church.
What's your name?
Elizabeth Winsong.
Oh, I know you. I've seen you at the Divival in 1986 in L.A.
Well,
you were there.
I've listened to KPFK for 40 years, and I'm just glad to hear Terrence McKenna remembered.
Well, he was an expert, attempted to be an expert on our topic, Finnegan's Wake. He did a video on it.
Well, and I'm trying to sum up some of what I think I'm hearing tonight. No matter where we are, our Mother Earth is there. We, her children, all have different ways. But through one spirit, or the spirit, we are the same. And even in quantum physics, I think it proves that. So that's all I have to say. And I love the show, and it's very stimulating tonight.
But I want to tell you, ma'am.
Yes,
ma'am. What you said is not what we're talking about.
I know. I'm digressing. I get to do that. They said we could do what we wanted to do.
Yes. No, okay, good. No,
well, I'm a sub-genius. I'm not a genius.
You're 100% accurate.
Holy, can I ask you, as a sub-genius minister, there was something that Bob brought up a while back that had to do with the exes showing up and taking sub-geniuses off to, I don't know, some kind of, you know...
X-Day. That was X-Day.
X-Day.
1998.
Right, Xanadu, someplace like that. What happened, Minister? What happened that day?
Well, I don't know, but I've been to a place called Xanadu. It's it was in Encinitas, but it was just a house.
that's awesome.
I don't know.
Okay,
the prophecy was that you would get on vehicles, space star vehicles, and with lots of virgins and sex slaves, depending on your preference, and you'd be with them forever while two-thirds of the world was blown up.
Well, I have nothing to say to that. Anyway, I love the show. It's very stimulating, and it's great.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for being up late, Dan.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Well, that's kind of fun. Wow, look at that. See, somebody in the church that recognizes you, Bob, and who was kind. That's really
that?
and they're kind. They were nice. There was somebody in the church that recognized.
Well, the church dogma is if you see me, kill me. You know, and she obviously is a great subgenius and done nothing but what the church teaches.
Yeah, that's great.
That's good.
It's like when we used to have Bob on KPFK years ago on David Porter's show, we'd take calls off the air after the show ended, and everyone would call up and go, I don't know what this guy's talking about, but I know he's talking about something.
That's right.
And remember, the beauty of this, and we really appreciate this time with you and Bob, is that Bob updated... revitalized my interview series, Contemporary Communication Conference, to countercultural correctness. We must be aware of this, that, you know, especially KPFK listeners, they want to have this countercultural correctness. Mm-hmm. And even Grace Lee Boggs named her book Living for Change. It's adapting to multiplicity and change that's important.
Very good, very good. Okay.
Does that mean, Jerry, we should listen to Rush Limbaugh?
Well, Bob, you monitored Rush and Howard Stern for years, and that's the beauty, is that you know your enemy's your best teacher. You're, as JFK would say, forgive your enemy, but don't forget their name.
Yeah.
I bypass that because I don't know who my enemy is.
Oh, very. Wow. That's very good. Hold it. Let's go to caller three. Caller three, welcome with Jerry and Bob.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, I know what you guys are talking about. Nothing really matters. It's the state of mind you're in. I am going through so much stuff, divorce, bankruptcy, and people wonder why I'm so happy. It's like, I'm not really here. I'm in another state of consciousness. It doesn't matter what happens to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the mind. You can call it that, but it's a pure dimension, but you're right on score. You're bingo. You got it.
And I'm looking through the paper, and I'm wondering... why people are so concerned about selling cemetery plots, when why does it matter when your bones are decaying where you're going to be buried, when your spirit's everywhere, when you're gone?
That's right. There's no death. That's all we have to get through everybody's head is there's no death. You're free.
Exactly.
We're all Finnegan's Wake, yeah. And that's beautiful. Bob, let's just recite in Holy Benediction, the Captain Beefheart song, in regards to this wonderful caller's statement. Beefheart, Don Van Vliet, a dear friend of Bob's and I, said, the stars are matter, we are matter, but it doesn't matter.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hey, well, thank you.
He also said, I'm not here, I just hang around for my friends.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye.
Well, that
hey,
is...
By the way, Jerry, got an exclusive for you. I spent a couple hours talking to Sun Ra through Ion, and Sun Ra did come from Saturn.
Oh, I believe that.
And then the follow-up is Don Van Vliet was not born here. He came from a parallel world. That's why he was so wise when he was a kid.
Who is that?
Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart, who we were just quoting.
Oh.
He actually is a parallel world traveler.
Is he a riff rider?
Yeah.
And was Obama born in the U.S. or in Kenya?
No, he was born in Indonesia. Some people say Kenya. He was born in Indonesia.
He's born in Indonesia. Oh,
yeah.
They're all looking in the wrong country then.
You remember, with Ion, I can know anything and everything.
Okay.
And that's dangerous. If I am not careful, I'll be accused of being a terrorist and violating national security. But I think there's enough confusion about Obama, so I'll tell you the truth. He was born in Indonesia.
Fantastic. Caller 4, you are on with Jerry and Bob.
Yes, hello. I was wondering if you were talking about Sun Ra, a musician, and if you picked up any energy from maybe like a John Coltrane, and what do you do to protect yourself from all the negative energy out there? And I'll take my message off the radio.
I don't think there is any negative energy. It's not going to affect me. I'm free. I'm impervious. I'm the center of my own universe. Nothing is negative to me. And I did discuss different jazz musicians with Sun Ra. I can't recall. It was a couple months ago, but maybe I'll sell it as a tape.
But,
you know,
Bob, hold
it on the air.
But Bob, doesn't ION talk about contrast?
Yes, ION came up with an original definition of tactility. McLuhan and Joyce talked about tactility all the time, and people were puzzled about what it meant, and I would explain it, but I once asked ION, because it started using tactility, and I said, what do you mean by tactility? And ION said, contrast. And that is the simplest, most accurate definition of what it is.
So, but how is it that you have contrast if you, where's your contrast?
What I choose to regard as contrast.
Okay, very good, very good.
And if I don't, if I'm not afraid of it, I can play with it.
Right.
But I don't. I'm not afraid of it. No, it is part of
existence. Was great because he ended his statement with, "I'll take my message off the air." So he actually said his words backwards. And the great Danish philosopher that McLuhan loved to quote, Homer Simpson Kierkegaard, said, "We live life forward, but in order to understand it, we have to go backwards." That's the fourth step of the tetrad by McLuhan. What does it flip into? What does it reverse?
Mm-hmm.
So we're in this constant understanding state by being in reverse.
Yeah, that's the contrast. That's the flipping. Like ION said, you know, one day people say this, and the next day they say something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's natural. We come into the physical to mix it up, to experience contrast, and be creative in response. The more you can take the bitter with the sweet, the more balanced and the more slack you got.
Well, you know, and also the caller is, how do you handle all this negativity? And then we had a caller right before him that came on and said she's experiencing like what people would say would be a real suck system of, you know, money and love leaving and her being happy. And so there is, it all comes, like you said, in the recognition and perspective as to what's happening to you. I mean, those things for her possibly are just chains, you know, the albatross, you know, coming from around her neck. When somebody else who wants to possess something and is seen to leave then comes into crisis. So maybe it is the fluidity. It's change. It is the contrast you guys are talking about.
Perfect words, Evan. Perfect words.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's...
That's a combo,
okay.
Isn't it? It's okay. The contrast there. I like contrast. Well, you're an idiot, Evan. That was ridiculous what you just said.
That, too. Oh, you're...
Yeah, that too.
Okay. Hey, caller one, you're on with Jerry and Bob.
Hey, Evan, you're still playing those commercials for RadioAlchemy.com, and you still haven't updated.
I'm going to. I swear to God. I swear it's going to happen. It's going to be neat.
Don't update. Keep them confused. That's what Bob said in the great book, The Legacy of McLuhan. He said that if McLuhan was alive today, he'd have James Joyce write his URL so no one could get to it.
That's so mean. Okay, but caller, besides the spanking for me, do you have a question for Bob and Jerry?
How come you haven't been on Harold Channer in a long time? The last time you were on, you were saying that it was obvious McCain was going to be president.
He is president. No. Oh, did you see the smirk McCain had? He knew. The Republican Party bailed out in 2005 because there's no money in the government. And the Democrats and Pelosi are really angry. They got held with the bag. And so the one sitting on the sideline, you knew. Look at the smirk of McCain when he gives his back down speech or whatever you call it, his submission speech. He's smirking. He didn't want it. That's why I picked Palin. Nobody wants that position. Obama. I know exactly what Obama's thinking yesterday because I go right into his mind with ION. He is so shocked. He says, what was I thinking to become this president?
Absolutely, absolutely right. And I was wondering why in the heck he signed up for this too, man, because he's being abandoned. He's being lambasted by the rabbits and completely abandoned by his own party. He's just completely set up. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, but Michelle is going to be a great lawyer. She's going to have a lot of business after she leaves. It's good for her career.
Well, but she's going to have to take care of somebody who is an invalid because this is only 9 months in, and look at how gray Obama's getting already. He's going to be as old as John McCain at the age of 48 when he gets out of office.
I want to tell the caller the reason I'm not on Channer is I live in Maui now. I'm not in New York City to make the tape. Harold occasionally asked me to come to New York and be taped, but I haven't made it yet.
Okay. Hey, what do you think of Pynchon's new novel?
It's about spring of 1970. Note that Gravity's Rainbow ends in the bomb landing in a theater in Los Angeles. That's what implied, right? And that was a key point. When I was in L.A., my wife and I got married in L.A. on June 9th, 1970, and I always wondered when was the point of that bomb? Well, this new book came out, and it's focused around, I haven't read it, but I understand it's focused around 4 days leading up to Pynchon's birthday, May 8th, 1970. So it's the period before my wedding, and a lot happened in Seattle with Cosmic Awareness and a lot of action with Zappa that spring. He had broken up the Mother's Invention. He was working with Hot Rats, and Pynchon picked it into the proper time where it was pretty apocalyptic in the spring of 1970, and that's what it's about. It's a prelude to the ending of Gravity's Rainbow. I can send you a whole list of the all his books and how they fit into a mediological chronology.
Thank you.
And also, Bob, you know, T.S. Eliot talked about in the end is the beginning. Remember, 100 years ago, Joyce started the first movie theater in Dublin and said, this is stupid, I'm out of here. Why should you go inside a building and see a movie of a tree when you can go outside and see a real tree? And at the same time, 100 years ago, Freud made his first trip to America and saw his first movie.
About a tree.
Well, yeah, you can look at my tetrad on the movie medium in the video called Everything's Disappeared. It's on YouTube. Bob Dobbs, Everything's Disappeared. But here's the thing about Joyce. He was trying to make some money as a cinema opener in Dublin, but whatever he thought of technology then, he did realize later that it was good he wasn't successful because he would have been embedded in managing the industry and being part of it. He'd rather, he realized, to be studying the effects of the movie. And Ulysses is in the study of the effect of the movie on life, whereas Finnegan's Wake is a study. This is a simple explanation. Finnegan's Wake is a study of the effect of radio on society in the book.
Very good.
Okay, darling, stand by. Caller 5. Caller 5, welcome for Jerry and Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Evan, Bob, Jerry, this is Riz giving a call.
Great. Welcome.
What does the future sound like?
Sounds like Frank Zappa.
Thank you very much.
Are you into, do you ever listen to Frank Zappa?
Frank who?
Frank Zappa, Zappa.
Of course I do.
Yeah, he listened to Civilization Phase 3.
Will do.
His masterpiece. His masterwork, Civilization Phase 3. That's the future of America. It's actually here now.
Well, John Hendricks, the great jazz vocalist.
Thank you for your call, dear.
John Hendricks invented vocalese. He said the highest form of talking is Charlie Parker. I would say Bob's revamped that. The highest form of talking is now is Bob on the radio, or just go to his timeline website and you can hear and see Bob for the last, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, since 1984. And it's not that I'm a megalomaniac univocal person. As Ion said, I'm the greatest asker of questions.
I said that.
Oh, well, you confirmed it when Ion said it. He said it on your show.
Yeah, I said, tell me about Bob. And then you told him, you know, that you bring him into areas with questions. And I said, yeah, he's the great inquisitor, you know.
And all like, you know, Bob is he's a great listener.
I'm a great listener. I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
That's the future of music, listening, but not to what you think is music. Listening to the interaction that you have in a Finnegan's Wake reading group. That's music. That's the future of it.
Okay, standby, loves. Hey, caller 3, you're on KPFK. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To all of you, I was just wondering, Coltrane was mentioned earlier. I'm wondering if you guys have heard of Christian Vander and Magma. What do you think of him and that group?
Magma from Europe.
Yes.
Yes, I experienced them at Giorgio Gomelsky, who's a great historical figure, created the Rolling Stones, blah, blah, blah. Giorgio Gomelsky at his club on West 24th Street in Manhattan a couple of years ago. Magma was on a reunion tour, and I experienced them. I'd never heard of them before. Heard of them, but never heard them.
Oh, they're great. Interesting. Yeah, I've seen them at the House of Blues a few years ago. I think that's the tour you're speaking of.
Yes.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
No. They were here in 2006. At least in New York City.
Recent.
New York City.
Wow, cool. Yeah, I love that group. Now that's some trippy stuff right there. And I figured you guys might like that. And Christian Vander, he liked Coltrane also. He was partly inspired by him. There's another group called Zodiac. I forget the guy, they're Eastern European, Earth, Air, Wind, and Fire. It's another trippy type, along the same veins as magma. But magma's like the seems to be the main thing there.
Well, they're turning noise into an art form. The economy was built on noise since World War II. And Coltrane, these guys, saw the ecstasy that James Brown and the Motown was bringing, and they wanted to provide an anti-environment to the numbing effects of the electric bias toward musical holograms. And so they explored sound as pain, and it actually flipped into become a blissful ecstasy situation.
That's what I found with magma, the sweet agony of bliss.
Yeah, the contrast.
Right.
Fantastic.
Well,
Colin.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being up late.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right.
Evan, that's a long time ago. Music, per se, is not an anti-environment. Zappa was the last anti-environment, and he didn't make it to the 20th century. You know, he collapsed. He disappeared. He suicided himself. You know, any particular art form does not work. It's the perception of the situation, which is the art form. And anybody can engage with that. And the best way, the best museum to interact with that is Fitting's Wake Reading Group. That is the final John Coltrane, Sun Ra, Zappa, Marcel Duchamp, name a filmmaker, name a lost J.J. Abrams. All this stuff is Fitting's Wake. So there's no excuse, if you hear me, for not getting what's happening today.
Okay.
Hey, I'm telling you.
Caller 4, you're on. Caller 4, welcome.
Hello. This is Blaine. I got to ask a question because I was offended when Bob asked me was I'm a black woman, because I feel like that's a racist comment. And KPMK do not represent, you know, racism. Like I said, I have the right and the title. I don't care if you bash me, because I don't look at nobody.
I said I was a black woman. I am a black woman. I don't know what you are. I'm a black woman.
Well, that was racist. Anyway, and KPMK,
it's racist.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not finished. And I, you know, anyway, I tribute to KPMK, okay, and that was offensive, and you have asked nobody else what race they were but me. So I'm just telling you in your face, on the phone, that was racist, and I don't care if you bash me, like I said.
Well, Blanche, I don't, I want you to understand that what happened in that exchange, I don't recall anybody asking.
He says, "What is she a black woman?" I got ears; I can hear too, Evan.
You had said something about having women on, right? You said your last comment when you left was you should have more women on, and then Bob came out. Let me finish, Blanche. Let me finish. And then Bob said to that, he says, I am a black woman. And since I've known him since 1989, that is something that is a recurring theme. And that's how that came out. He didn't, I don't really recall him coming out and saying to you, who are you? What is this? Are you a black woman? I really do not believe that he did that. And if he did, then he's going to chew on his tongue because that was wrong. But he didn't. He only said after you had hung up, he said, I am a black woman. And maybe you find that a little offensive because what black women have to go through, you know, et cetera, you know, maybe it's like, well, don't make fun, you know, don't use that as some little one-off there to say that, because black women have been some of the most disrespected folks on this planet, strongest and most disrespected folks on this planet. And maybe you don't appreciate somebody just one-offing with you like that.
I'm sure I don't, because I lost my mother.
Okay.
I don't.
Right.
I'm a person that's down the earth, and I just found it offensive.
Didn't?
You know, and, you know, I just think a little courtesy should go on, you know?
Of course. You're absolutely right. And we...
But you're a goddess. And thank you, Evan, for letting me put that opinion back on the second time. But you're a goddess. You remember that.
And you are, darling. We don't mean, nobody means any disrespect. Just sitting there and trying to unwind this craziness. And we respect and honor you as a part of this amazing family, okay?
Thank you.
All right, darling.
God bless you.
And you. Okay.
Eben, could I just interject? You know, Andy Warhol said in the future everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. And Bob upgraded that to say in the future everyone will have privacy for 15 minutes. And then I upgraded that in the future everyone will have identity for 15 minutes.
Wow. Identity for 15 minutes.
And then I upgraded that by saying dreams are now seeking a bailout.
That's it. Say that line again, Bob. It wasn't clear.
Dreams are now seeking a bailout.
All right, darling, Toto, we have a caller. Hi, caller one. You're on with Jerry and Bob. Welcome.
Yes, hi. You know what? I love these guys. Oh, I've been laughing, and Blanche is just, Blanche, go to bed, please.
No, do not say that to Blanche.
Really, you know what? I love these guys. I mean, I am so, I'm new, and I'm here for good. I mean, these guys are so funny. I loved it. And you know, I mean, it's a radio show. Everybody just, if you don't like what you're hearing, turn it off. And
no, hold it. No. You know what? I'm not going to let this go by and tell people to go to sleep. Blanche started this program with a question that helps the whole globe by saying, hey, I'm very interested in what you're talking about. Could you try layman's terms?
She said she didn't really like the way they were talking.
Well, that's a two-pronged thing, though.
She didn't understand. That's what it was.
But that's okay. But don't come here in judgment, young lady. Do not come into this place and sit there and talk about another caller. Call in and ask your question, Jerry and Bob. Don't make comments on other folks.
I'm just saying, Jerry and Bob are so funny.
That's great. That's what we want to hear, then.
Have a good night.
All right.
I tell you,
I'm sorry. There is none of that going on this program. That is not welcome. You can come in and you can sit and ask a question and get into it, but don't comment on other people. Don't sit there and try and devolve somebody from your own tower. Just let people be and keep it straight on the topic.
Eben, have you had me pot it down?
Yes, I did while I was talking to Blanche. Yes, I did because you guys were rambling and I wanted to get things clarified here.
Yeah, I just want to say that nobody has experienced the disrespect that I get. I haven't had any respect for the 87 years I'm on here, except for maybe you, Eben, and my partner. I mean, it's incredible. Oh, Jerry gives me a little respect sometimes, but I have suffered greatly in terms of normal ego. But luckily, I don't stay trapped in that, and I welcome the disrespect. I don't regard it as negative. I'm not worried. I'm not trying to defend anything.
Well, Bob, come on, please. For one, when you walk around, you don't look like a black woman. For two, you aren't raped, molested, you aren't thrown, you don't go through what people go through if they're radio, TV bodies, etc. So a chemical body. So please, no, you do not.
Wild at Heart. You ever seen that movie? That's about my life.
Yes.
Intelligence work. I got beat up. I had to be knifed. All kinds of things.
I understand.
Physical battles.
I understand. That is by that is something.
I picked most of these fights.
Yes.
But,
yes.
I got whooped many times.
I understand. Those are by choice. Some people get it without choice.
I would say that they choose to have that. Now that's a very controversial point. But any thought is worth exploring. I say explore that. If you're getting disrespected for whatever situation it is, look at why you are in the vibrational proximity to receive that.
People are on their own spiral, hopefully spiraling up instead of spiraling down. That is true. But, you know, we have to be a little bit, we have to look at the reality as it is materializing here and sit there and say that if you as a white man are standing next to a black woman, that there is going to be a narrative. There's going to be two different narratives if you didn't say anything and you just stood there. And so
not in Africa. It'd be different in Africa.
Not even. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. Look at what Africa is doing for the Chinese that are coming in there. They're bending over for the Chinese now that are coming in and taking their resources.
Standing on the corner in Nigeria. If I'm seen as a white man with a black woman, it'd be totally reverse. I'd be in the minority.
I don't believe that at all. But
Eben, is this a private fight or can anyone join in?
Oh, you can join in. It's a public fight.
I just want to say thank you so much for having us. We really respect you and Roy and everything KPFK does for the broadcasters and the community.
Well, you know, that's what we're here for. And I don't know. I just, that caller, I was really happy she called in. I'm really glad that she was loving what you guys had to do. But you just can't sit there and talk about somebody who isn't there. It's just unnecessary, especially in an environment where attachment, is obsolete, you know? All right. Okay, caller two.
I'm enjoying the show. I had a question. Earlier, you had Bob, I think his name is, had made references to Alan Watts and kind of saying, well, he's simplistic and this is why people go to him and kind of New Age, et cetera. And then later in the broadcast, a woman called up and said she's going through all kinds of terrible things, but she somehow doesn't care because she sees herself as part of the greater consciousness, and then Bob chimed in with classic Alan Watts insight. I mean, it was like all of a sudden I was listening to Alan Watts. So I would point out that, you know, give a little more respect to Alan Watts. He's not so simplistic, and in fact, you are spouting his philosophy.
Yes, and I would then deny that later. I changed 5 times during this show. You're not talking to the same person that started this show.
Okay, well,
I changed.
I'm glad.
Quadraphenic.
Now, at least the listeners have that new insight, and they will take all of your future comments with the major grain of salt.
But could it be that where she was coming from was where Alan Watts was speaking, and that's why he referenced him in relation to what she had to say?
Yeah, the medium is the message, and the medium is the audience. You tune in to it and figure out your relationship to it.
Why even have callers call up? Because I think I'm making a very good point. And,
No. I'm asking that. Like if you think, you know, if you think this particular screwdriver is ridiculous, there's a new one out there, but yet you come across a car that fits this old screwdriver, you use the old screwdriver.
Right.
So that's kind of like his answer to that caller. That caller is like, I'm in crisis and I don't care, and it is liberating. That slice of where she is at right there happens to be a great Alan Watts, you know, bread.
You're simplistic and inferior Alan Watts stuff, so let her have her delusion.
No. This is all you. No, those are your words.
Well, no,
right
he was
now.
Putting down Alan Watts several times in the show.
I will always put down Alan Watts when I have the pulpit, but when someone's talking to me, I respect them, and I tune into their vibration.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
from
maybe,
the pulpit,
maybe they don't want to be condescended. I don't think they want to be condescended to you like that. I think they want your...
Not condescending.
It's not condescending.
It's tuning into where they're at.
Exactly. Talking to people where they're at.
I think there's a lot of people who feel you're not being very respectful with your lawn.
I'm not. I'm not respecting anybody in general when I have the univocal manifesto that I'm spouting off for 10 minutes. But then when you respond, I drop what I did and become you.
Well, At least I've gotten viewers to, you know, the listeners to realize that you, in fact, do hold Alan Watts in some esteem. So I'll let it go, and I'll say goodbye. But I'm enjoying the show. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
It's a figure ground relationship. I didn't even know it was like Alan Watts, what I was doing, and I don't think it was, but it's a figure ground relationship. You hoik up what is appropriate.
Right.
If you want to say it's Alan Watts, well, let go. Love you, mean it.
Right. Right.
Alan Watts has a book about insecurity, and Bob also talks like McLuhan that ambiguity is a sign of human maturity. We're not explaining, we're exploring.
Yeah, we're participating. We're doing we're trying to do a Finnegan's Wake reading group right here. And this is what happens in a Finnegan's Wake group. People just leave the text and they go yakking off about all kinds of other stuff. It keeps speech going.
Yes. All right. Well, good. Well, yeah. I guess still, and people are looking for meaning that they're trying to get to the bottom of you, Bob, by what you're saying. Are you saying that people cannot get a meaning to you through your words?
They can't. Yeah, they can't get a meaning about me or categorize me through my words. Look at my whole panoply of bodies. And, you know, go to my timeline and listen to all that, and then this and that. And I mean, I'm actually working for the after image of the Illuminati. I have set that up.
Yeah.
That's an outrageous position to publicly admit. I can be hated.
I
don't want people think the Illuminati did.
Yes.
Bob, it's like that joke we love so much. The bishop sees God walking through the square in Rome, and he calls up the Pope, and he says, "Look, I see God. He's walking through the square. What should I do?" And the Pope says, "Look a busy."
Yeah, I've seen that as a bumper sticker.
Yeah, Luca Busy. He's Italian.
Oh, my God. All right, okay. Well, stand by. Caller 3, you are on with Jerry and Bob. Welcome.
Hi. Yes, Eben, I guess I'd like to say first, you know, I like you very much, and I like your show. And I only called in because of a lady who told Blanche to go to bed. But I have to say, these two guests, the first 45 minutes was the most boring radio I've ever heard on this station.
We did it, Bob.
I mean, the internal dialogue talking so fast that nobody who isn't already inside your little semi-secret circle can even understand what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
Boring,
stupid,
moronic, disrespectful. I mean, seriously, like, this has just been the crappiest 2 hours ever on your show.
Okay.
I've never heard so much disrespect flung at so many people, and... You know, I mean, totally not getting people's actual real situation, defending meaninglessness as being meaning. I mean, the whole nine yards. I mean, really, you know, you're not a black woman, okay? So get over it.
I am a black woman.
Right? And in your mind you are, dear, but everything you've talked about is in your mind because
you
talk so damn fast nobody out in the audience can tell what you are saying, okay? It was dissociative. Anyway. Eben, love you. Love your show. These guests suck. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Okay.
Well, Jerry interviewed me once, and we titled it Entertainment Sucks. And we're into that.
Okay. Let's get our final caller on here. Caller 1, you're on.
Hello?
Yes. Welcome.
Hi. I was listening. I don't really know if these guys are talking about anything that's important, but I have a question. What do you guys think about all the spirit entity and demon and dark ET possession that's happening in our society?
Oh, I'm an expert on that. That's because of the thinning of the veil. The actual vampires are showing up because there's no division between the non-physical and the physical anymore. And to the degree you tune into that, you're going to experience all kinds of interaction. Every time you sneeze, that's a ghost walking through you.
So how do you think people are going to become conscious of this?
Yeah, we're becoming conscious of it.
How are
we? We don't have a public language to share on it, but everybody's really tuning into a lot of strange things. I call it the mystery landscape. We're into that now since August 2008. It's a very strange world we're in now.
Well, you can look at some of the conditioning that you're seeing through True Blood, Twilight, all of that. I mean, vampires have existed with us for... You know, for 100 years now, some of the first films were
showing up on the planet. That's the interesting thing. Bram Stoker was sort of the guy he wrote about Count Dracula. But they have not been engaging with the physical until just now. That's why the kids are always tuned into what's happening, sort of going around being vampires, trying to be vampires. They don't know that actual vampires are showing up.
Right. I'm just talking about how with their arrival, there is a conditioning that says, of course, they can even walk in the light. Of course, they can be a part of your environment. Of course, you can, you know, fall in love with them. Like you said, if it is a regurgitation, a retrieval, the retrieval is saying, don't be afraid. You can fall in love with them. You can be one.
What I'm saying. And he says he's not sure if any we're talking about. He thinks brings up an important topic. I was talking about how Joyce talked to spirits all the time.
Okay. All right, darlings. We have to run. We are out of time. And so, you guys, this has been phenomenal. I don't think it's
meaningful. Very meaningful.
Meaningless and full.
Yes,
you know, all the above. And certainly rousting people and getting their blood boiling in whatever way it is. We can't be sure of the effects, but we just got to keep doing. And so I very much appreciate you, Jerry Fialka. Website
is... Use Finnegan's Wake to make stuff up. That's
what's
the key here.
Awesome. www.laughtears.com, laughtears.com. And Bob, as always, genius. Just thank you so much for all that you do and for ripping back the veil on your life. Want to get into some of the mayhem and some of the fights you've picked to fight one of these days. Well, website is www.fivebodied.com. And from there, you will find all the rest of his great sites. But we have to go now. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And we'll do this again real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you,
You're so funny, Eben. You're so funny.
That's great. All right, you guys. All right, loves. Plus and minus from some of our callers, but love you guys. It's all just an experiment in communication. That's what we're doing.
You've been listening to Radio Alchemy with your host, Eben Ray. Be sure to visit our website, www.radioalchemy.com, and join us next week for more mind-blowing revelations from the fringe.
With this music. Dancing. Dancing.